The National Road Traffic Amendment Bill is out. It was approved by Cabinet for submission to Parliament in March this year, but probably mostly because of the truncated parliamentary program caused by coronavirus. It's taken until yesterday for the draft law to be released. And one of the things it does, the most noticeable thing that it does, is ban anyone who has had a drink from operating a motor vehicle until no alcohol can be detected in their blood or on their breath. Professor Charles Parry, Director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the South African Medical Research Council. Charles, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
How many countries around the world go this far?
My checking today was 23 other countries, including Brazil. It's probably the one we know the best of all the countries.
And those countries who've had it in place for a while, does it make a difference?
Yes. I mean, we did a review a couple of years ago, but it does often need to be combined with other interventions to be successful. I mean, there are data that show that it works, but you need to look at it over long periods of time. And certainly it's unlikely to be successful if not combined with interventions such as increasing police patrols, random breath testing and things like that. So, yeah, it does have some effect.
What you refer to there is, I'm sure, what most people who want to continue to be able to have one drink and then drive, or more than one drink and then drive, or couldn't care how many drinks they have and then drive, will be, don't change the law, fix the law enforcement first.
Well, that's an argument that's been there for a long time. Some people saying keep it at 0.05 and really have a lot of enforcement. But I think it's quite difficult for those of us who've had a drink, you know, to calculate, you know, how many can you have? Can you have one? Will 2 hours later be enough? So I think this really, we have a huge problem in this country, and about 114,000 people killed on our roads annually, costs us about 140 billion rands a year. Currently, and so the idea is to sort of take the guesswork out of it and just keep them separate. I would probably go for something like a 0.02 level, which will also take away the risk of being, you know, caught and dealt with if you have some medication, for example, which has some alcohol on you.
How real is that risk, Charles?
If it's zero, you might get picked up if you have some medications which have alcohol on you. So I think certainly we also need to look at the sort of kinds of punishment. I think it would be quite severe to get a criminal sentence for something like 0.02. So, and some other countries have Brazil at one time separated it with only a criminal sanction when it got to 0.06 and above. So I would say between 0.02 and 0.05, just a fine like you do for speeding, but above 0.05, then you have criminal sanction like currently in place. So there's room for discussion about this, but I think we haven't got it right. So I think we do need to do something different. I mean, I was talking to Andy Nicol from Hoedskool Hospital. I said, have anybody come in the last couple of days? And he said, well, a drunk driver and a drunk pedestrian since last night. So, you know, it is an issue and they needed ICU treatment. So it's costing resources. It costs, particularly at this particular time when we're looking at needing resources for potentially for COVID patients. We don't want our, you know, have to put people on ventilators because of drunk driving.
And how much, look, I'm happy with this. I mean, if that is the rule, then I will abide by the rule. At the moment, I have a glass of wine and I drive home, or I have two glasses of wine and I take an Uber. So if it means that I can't go out and have a glass of wine, I probably won't go out as often. I'll just go home and have a glass of wine there and invite people to my home and ask them to Uber or whatever the case may be. So I'm not too fussed about this. But how much more of a danger am I on the road if I've had a 200ml glass of wine versus I've drunk soda water for the evening?
Yeah, I can give it to you in terms of blood alcohol concentration, so I'm not sure, because obviously it differs for different people, and I'm not sure exactly what size you are, John. But with a blood alcohol concentration of 0.02 to 0.05, you have a 3 times greater risk of dying in a vehicle crash than if you're sober. So there must be some effect on your perception and things like that of having I think we don't realize it. We think we're okay with one glass of wine, and if it's within an hour, it's probably a risky situation. So I think there's a lot of things we don't know, and you might be more tired at the time. So I think the aim here is really to take the guesswork out of it. We do have the sixth highest level of drinking the most per drinker. And we have a lot of alcohol-related harm, and maybe, unfortunately, we've got to go for a harder system, which may not work for someone like you who could drink one glass and be okay after an hour, but many people don't. We have a binge-drinking culture. 59% of our drinkers, apparently according to the World Health Organization, engage in heavy episodic drinking. So we're not a nation of people just having one glass and then going home.
Charles, thank you very, very much indeed. Professor Charles Parry, Director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the South African Medical Research Council, and also working in that unit is Dr. Catherine Egber, and she's with us to talk about something that the Deputy Health Minister, Joe Parshler, said on Sunday. It was International No Tobacco Day on Sunday, and he said it is government's aim to introduce a 100% smoking ban in public areas. So if you are in public, you do not smoke. That would be the law that government wants. Dr. Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Is this something to get behind?
So this is actually part of the control for tobacco and electronic delivery systems bill that was put out for public comment in 2018. And this is actually one of the things South Africa signed into when they became a party to the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which South Africa ratified in 2005, which requires that the countries should put in place legislation to protect non-smokers and kids from being exposed to secondhand smoke.
And that's feasible to introduce a 100% ban on smoking in public. I'd love it. You're not going to find too many people who are more anti-smoking than I am. So I would be delighted. But is it feasible to make? So where would people smoke? They'd only be allowed to smoke in their homes, but they're not allowed to smoke in their homes if they have children in their homes. Are they allowed to go into their backyards? Where would people be able to smoke?
So they will be able to smoke in their homes only if their homes are not occupied by workers or used for private business or used or you have private workers or like domestic workers working for you, because you'll be exposing them to secondhand smoke. Also, people will be only allowed to smoke in designated smoking areas outside the building, because once you're inside the building, currently South Africa has a law that allows 25% of an indoor place to be designated as a smoking area. But we all know that smoke, just like air, does not have a boundary. Once you open the door, it goes out. And studies have found that people who are in places that are not within the smoking area usually have tobacco smoke. And such areas too have a high concentration of the smoke. So people can smoke, but not in places where you expose people that do not want to smoke or children to secondhand smoke. Many times when I drive to work, I see kids being exposed to secondhand smoke inside the vehicles. Maybe their parents are taking them to work or to school, and so you find children being exposed to the smoke from their parents smoking. And it's really appalling, because such kids, the smoke can affect their brains, it can make them have asthma, it can make them have problems with their respiratory organs. So this law essentially is to protect non-smokers from being exposed to secondhand smoke, because of the 8 million people who die of tobacco-related diseases, nearly 1 million of them do not smoke. It means they only die because they are exposed to people's smoke.
And what would be the approach towards policing this? I don't think you want to make it a criminal offence for somebody to light up a cigarette outside an office block. but it would be against the law. So how does one address monitoring compliance and punishment?
So John, it's not like the police will be going about arresting people who are smoking on the streets. It's not really like that, although the industry wants us to believe it's going to be like that, but it's not really going to be like that. So the law would ensure that we have signs placed in places in front of buildings, and people must be made to know that they are not supposed to smoke in certain places. We already have the law currently we have in South Africa, the tobacco control law we have in South Africa already does not allow people to smoke, for example, in workplaces. So this law is just adding to it in a bit to strengthen what we already have. So it's not like we're an entirely new law is being brought into the country right now. It's just that the law is being strengthened so that people are not inadvertently exposed to secondhand smoke. So the policing part of it is not going to be a problem if, for example, employers make employees aware that they cannot smoke within the complex, for example. And secondly, it's also going to protect people who work, for example, in restaurants and bars, because you know that some of the people who work there, they have to serve people who are smoking in the smoking area, and sometimes they are not smokers themselves, and so they are exposed. So these things are things that are not so hard to enforce, because they are things that we already started doing them. In a study that was conducted by the Africa Tobacco Industry Monitoring and Research Institute in Sefako Makato University, in restaurants and bars, they found out that a lot of restaurants and bars which used to have the designated smoking areas have actually taken that off and already having a smoke-free restaurant and smoke-free bars so that people can enjoy their meals without being exposed to secondhand smoke.
Thank you very much indeed to Dr. Catherine Egber, a specialist scientist for the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit.